Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our friends at MyBlue. MyBlue is changing the way that people vape. It's easy, it's satisfying, it's a simple vape that's convenient. They introduced vaping to the world, and now you can get it with MyBlue. MyBlue gives you all the satisfaction with none of the hassle. You just click and go. With MyBlue, it's easy to use the one-click pods, and you can switch between flavors in seconds. They have a range of flavors to choose from. Just 20 minutes to charge, and you're set all damn day. For a limited time, MyBlue is giving you their MyBlue starter kit for just $1, but hurry, this won't last long. Terms and conditions may apply. Go to MyBlue.com to learn more today. You're going to get it for just $1 trial offer for the MyBlue kit. Check out MyBlue.com for full details. Let's fucking go. Kate and I got some conversation going last night on High Haters that talked about military stuff, and I wanted to address it. There's been all kinds of political nudes that's popped up, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but it is depressing looking at social media right now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's like there's not enough sports to distract us, so people.
And that's with
really
the World Cup going on.
Like, yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
the World.
Well, I think that's what it is. You with the U.S. not in the World Cup, not enough people are watching it, at least here in this country. So we have no distractions other than the dog days of summer in baseball.
Yeah.
So we're just focusing on all this bad shit that's going on in the world.
Every fifth tweet on my timeline is about a kid in a cage, and it makes me want to like just not log on to Twitter.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
It's not a good feeling.
And it's not like something that you should put blinders on, like, because I thought about that too, like muting that. But you can't do that. You can't mute something that's so important, so consequential to the country. It affects our standing in the world. Like, we try to be above that. And it's depressing. Everybody knows it's depressing. It's a huge issue. They've got to get it right. They've got to get this right. Immigration is an issue. We've got to get that right on both sides of the aisle. But we can't be using kids. But I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time talking about that because it's everywhere. And I think your opinion on that is going to be your opinion on that. And we're not going to change anything. So we're going to try to have a little bit of a lighter show today. We have a fighter pilot on a little bit later that Cons and Kate and Bren were a part of the interview there. So that'll be fun. And anytime you can bring on one of those fucking nerds, you have to do it. Because Top Gun is back in the action. And get the fuck out of here with Tom Cruise being Top Gun. That bitch would be old and out of the military by now.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. He could be at the tail end of his career, but there's a possibility.
What year did that movie come out? 1985?
1986. And he was a lieutenant then. So in the Navy, that's an 03. So, I mean.
So you're talking at least 5 years there for them to get lieutenant, most likely, right. Unless he's like a fast mover, maybe 4 years. So you're looking at somebody that's been in for 34 years. In order to do that, to go past the 30-year mark, he'd have to be at least a two-star at that point.
One or two, sure.
He's not going to be in charge of a school.
No.
Actually, he's crazy, makes weird choices, kind of weird. He'd totally be promoted.
Well, they would
be up there
have him retire before 30. They wouldn't let him go past 30.
I was going to say maybe that he would have gotten busted rank maybe a time or two, just knowing Maverick.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Maybe he got
but if
had,
that's the case, you get kicked out. They're not going to let you stay around as
Chaps,
an officer.
Chaps, it's Hollywood, bro.
It's
Let's
bullshit.
Not pick it apart.
We
Let's
need,
not pick
we
it
need
apart. Let's
good...
just appreciate that Maverick is coming back. As much as I don't like the Navy, I do like Top Gun, too.
Is
Let's
he starring
enjoy...
in it? Is he
yeah.
starring?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. See? Kate's getting excited.
He's jumping all over the couch of your military. How do you like that, Chaps?
Fuck Maverick, and I'm glad it happened to Goose. I'll just say that.
Oh, bold words. You
take that back.
I'll
can't
never
see it,
take
but
it
I'm
back.
Chomping my teeth at the mic.
I'll never delete a tweet, and I'll never take that back.
Goose stands are going to come for Chaps.
They probably are. There was a woman who was upset, because if Maverick really did spend 34 years in, he's probably going to be the type of dude who's ate up about being a military member. For
Definitely.
Sure.
Yep.
those guys, whenever you're a general level officer, I don't feel like people realize, civilians don't realize the amount of benefits that you get around base. You can basically do whatever the fuck you want when you're a general level officer. Like, you're parking at front of the grocery store. You're not waiting in line for shit. Everybody's basically sucking your dick or your clit or whatever you got as soon as you walk into the building if you're a general level officer. And that's how they want it. And they kind of deserve it. Like, on base, whenever you're a general officer, you deserve it. There was a woman who was upset in San Antonio this week because she was upset that she didn't get a military discount for her traffic court ticket.
She a friend of yours?
No, she's not. But I have been at places, and I'll admit, whenever I make a big purchase, because San Antonio is the biggest military town in the country. I don't know if you guys realize that or not.
Like, yes.
There's more military members here per capita than any other place in the country. So if I'm going anywhere and I'm buying a large purchase, I am definitely asking for a military discount. I just say, do you have one? If they don't, you move on. It's not a big deal, but most places around here too. Even when I went and got my Big Green Egg, my expensive-ass smoker that was like $1,400 or something, they gave me like 10% off. 10% off of $1,400 is huge.
Wait, where did you get that at Home Depot or like a Green Egg store?
No, it's just a local barbecue. It's like called Barbecue Outfitters down here, and it's just a local store. 10% off, $1,400 is $140 off. That's a lot.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So why not ask? But traffic court seems like a bold move.
Yeah, and the tweet was, it was somebody tweeted it, and it said, woman at the counter is upset she doesn't get military discount for fine on her traffic ticket. Talk about disrespecting the troops.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing when, like, it's clearly something you know you're not going to get a discount on, and then people get their panties in a bunch or their boxers in a bunch over not getting it. And I've seen in the stores around Camp Pendleton people making I don't want to say it looks like wives to me when I was at Pendleton, like at the Walmart, like people like losing their marbles over not getting a discount on certain things. And to me, it makes me want to shrivel up. I'm like, how can you have no honor or dignity in yourself right now? Why are you doing this?
Yeah. But why is this the hill you're going to die?
Yeah.
It's even worse when it's at a place that's super cheap. Like when it's like at IHOP, when it's like, dude, do you really need the 10% off of the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity? Like it's $5.99. Like, come on.
No, I'm with you, Chaps. When it's a larger purchase, you want to ask because, you know, just in case.
But I feel like asking is fine. Like asking is fine, but getting indignant if there isn't one or knowing where you should ask, I guess. Like, why would there be a military discount at the traffic court? Why?
Right. I feel bad sometimes if I ask and the folks, they seem really upset that there isn't one. They're like, oh, no, we don't. I'm really sorry. We should have one. I'm like, it's okay. It's not a big deal. Don't worry. I could still pay full price for whatever it is that I'm buying.
Don't worry. When you walk out, they're like, fucking asshole. Fucking guy. No, I'm just kidding.
That being said, where would you guys want a military discount if you could get one anywhere?
Just one?
I mean, not one, but like at a big place. Oh. Like if the one place that doesn't offer you one.
No, I gave it some thought. The first one that came to mind would be airline tickets, just because expensive it is to fly these days.
Yep.
That would just be awesome to get 10-20% off an airline ticket. Would be very, very choice.
That would be great. Mine would be Wawa because I go there like twice a day, every day of my life. I was talking to you about this, Chaps, going back through my bank account and seeing how much money I spend at Wawa on any given week. It's insane. And it's just for little things, like things that cost like a few bucks, but it adds up. So I would do a Wawa discount. Chaps, what are you doing?
McDonald's.
McDonald's.
I eat McDonald's breakfast so often, and I just said that IHOP is like so cheap and I wouldn't do it. But if I could just get 10% off, that would probably end up saving me like $100 a month.
Oh, yeah.
I eat Radio it basically Bren. Every morning.
Yeah.
If you were in, where would your discount place be?
Any bar ever.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I just try to think of where I spend most of my money, and it's on booze. So.
Yeah.
It would be nice if they said no more military discount. I would accept it if they said no more military discount. But if you have the veteran card from the VA or military, you don't have to pay sales tax anywhere.
That'd be phenomenal. That and again, that's something that adds up, especially if you got a bigger purchase.
And it's almost the same because most places only do 10%. So you're talking 8.5% wherever your sales tax is. That's almost the same.
Right. I mean, if I could get no sales tax when I buy clothes outside of New Jersey, whether it's online sometimes, that would be
excellent. A sharp dresser.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, clothes would definitely be another place. But and here's the other one I thought about, and this is absolutely not possible, but I thought it might be cool. Can you imagine if you got like a 20%, 30%, 40%, whatever discount when you bought a house? Like, obviously that extra 40%, 30% would have to – the bank would have to get paid somehow.
Yeah.
But can you imagine you're just like, ah, $500,000 house, but it's actually not $500,000 because you got your military discount.
That would be
nice.
You
say, hey – bank, you worry about where that other money's going to come from, but I'm only going to pay this much.
I'm writing the government today.
Yeah.
I mean,
free booze, you do get a
free house.
The VA loan is a big benefit. Like, that's one of the bigger benefits.
Oh, yeah. Don't
get
me wrong. That was how I was able to purchase a house at such a young age, that the VA, that you don't have to put any money down.
Yep.
Which always blows people away that don't know about it. The fact that you put $0 down when the rest of the civilized world puts, 20% down. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, because it takes – I mean, that's the reason why a lot of millennials can't afford to buy a home, because you have to put that 20% down, and that's substantial. I mean, if you're living in New York, you have to save $200,000, I mean, to buy a house somewhere nice.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And
I mean, maybe not that much, but a lot.
My brain just circled back, though, to this parking ticket thing, and I just remembered my – little glove compartment that is just crammed to the gills full of Philadelphia parking tickets right now. So maybe I will ask if they have a discount.
Yeah,
how do you get so many? Where do you go that you get so many parking tickets?
Philadelphia had an A&E show about how insane the parking authority is there. Like, you turn around. I've had people tell me, because you put your little ticket slip, you buy the little parking slip, you stick it in the window or whatever.
Right.
And I've had passersby be like, no. Make sure you put it exactly right here, because they'll ticket you and pretend they didn't see it. Like every time you park there, you just are like, oh, I'm going to get a ticket. And you just like add it into your budget. And so every few years they give out so many tickets, nobody like pays them. Every few years they just cleanse you.
Oh, that's nice. You're just holding out.
You have to stand in line all day. So I'm just holding out for when they have another one of those. They just did it.
I like that. My commanding officer, she used to live in Philadelphia, and her car was in her father's name, the registration, so she would definitely get an earful. So I was well aware that Philadelphia is absolutely horrible with parking tickets.
Yeah. So this lady, maybe she's from Philly, this lady asking for the discount, maybe she just had it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could be. We're going to go into the interview with the fighter pilot now, and that's going to be brought to you by our friend at the School of Automotive and Machinists and Technology, SAMTech. It's based in Houston, Texas. It's a fully accredited trade school, and if you ever wanted to work in NASCAR, NHRA, IndyCar, or learn any of the engines for Boeing, General Motors, or Toyota, you can visit them at samtech.edu/ZBT. SAMTech has been an industry leader since 1985, training listeners like you to do more than just change brake pads and oil. There is a real deal building machining and working on engines for some of the biggest companies in the world. SAMTech offers courses in block machining, cinder head machining, CNC machining, EFI calibration. In less than a year, SAMTech can help you get started on the career of your dream. SAMTech also offers an associate degree of applied sciences. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. Visit samtech.edu/CBT for more information, or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at samtechedu. That's samtech.edu/CBT to sign up for today. And you could use your GI benefits there too, which is awesome for military members who are just transitioning out. That's a big fucking deal. Let's do the interview. Here we go.
Hey, Cons and Kate here, and today we are joined by Matthew Wiz Buckley, who went from flying F-18s as a Top Gun pilot in the Navy to flying high as CEO of Top Gun Options in a multi-million-dollar options trading school, or running a multi-million-dollar options trading school. We are super excited to have you on. It seems like you've got a great story, and just if we could start out by you telling us a little bit about your military past and where you're at now.
You bet. Thanks. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah.
First of all, you guys can call me Wiz. That's my call sign.
As a cheesesteak enthusiast, yeah, so I'm all about it.
Yeah, Kate's a Philly gal, loves the Wiz. Where did Wiz come from?
What area, Phil? I'm from I'm one of six, and four were born in South Philly, and then my parents moved down to the Jersey Shore.
Oh, okay.
I was born down in Margate, but I'm a Philly. I'm an Eagles fan, unfortunately.
Yeah, go Birds!
World champs. Woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, I'm glad we're not done gloating. We're not done.
Well, yeah, so here's what's funny. Most fighter pilots aren't running around out there with Gucci call signs like Maverick or Wolfman.
Right.
As you all probably know, you earn your call sign, and it's usually doing something stupid. So if you want to think it's about cheese whiz, let's that. I'll leave it at that. That it has nothing to do with that or intelligence.
I want the real story. I want the.
It's a ten drink minimum. and maybe a demonstration, but no, the story is it's definitely an offline story. I'll leave it at that.
All right, my mind has an idea. I'm sure it's wilder than what I'm even thinking, but
probably
very cool with that.
Probably
since you're Marine, you're probably putting it right on target.
Yeah, I probably have a story just like yours, buddy. Okay.
So Wiz, just how did it come about that you became a pilot in the Navy? Start from the beginning.
Growing up, I grew up in South Jersey, and my parents, one of six, we were Irish Catholic family, and they always preached service above self. And across the street, my best friend growing up, his dad was a pilot in the Air National Guard out of Atlantic City, and he was bigger than life, man. He drew what was that? What was the thing with the Firebird, like a Trans Am, like an 8, remember that thing? He flew for the Air Guard, and he flew for Eastern Airlines. And this guy was larger than life. Orange flight suit. You know, they used to fly air defense, because the Bear bombers would come out of Cuba, and they'd fly down the East Coast to test our response time. So they'd scramble, and this guy'd pull up in his car and, you know, music blasting. I think I went to the bus stop a couple times to go to school the next day. His car is like up on his lawn, and he's like laying out of the door. I'm like, I want to. He told us one day, he's like, hey, when you guys get off the bus, just stay at the top of the hill. The bus stop was the top of the hill. And we're like, okay. He's like, just stay there at 3 o'clock. We're like, okay. And we're standing there, and right across like Brigantine Bay, across the bay in the Brigantine, there's like a dot. I see this dot. It's a smoking dot. And before I realize what it is, it's on top of us. It's an F-106. He goes right on top of us, pulls straight up, and, like, disappears.
Oh, that's awesome.
Whoa.
He got blown about 50 feet, books destroyed, you know, dirt in the teeth. And I said, I want to do that. And I always loved the ocean and, you know, living on the shore, I was always drawn to the beach and the ocean. So jets, you know, ocean. So I decided to go in the Navy.
Your backstory is way cooler than mine. I was like, I did bad in college and joined the Marines. You're like, I got blown away by a jet, and I decided. Wow. So, all right.
Shout out to my son. So my oldest, Matthew Buckley, is going to Norwich. He just graduated from high school down here in God's Waiting Room in Boca Raton. And he's into the Corps Cadets at Norwich University, and he wants to be a Marine aviator. So apparently I dropped him on his head when he was a kid.
Awesome. Congratulations to him. That's huge.
So what did you fly when you were in the Navy then?
I would say I was a Hornet baby. I flew the F-18 Hornet for about 15 years. So I did 10 years on active duty. Mm-hmm. I was a West Coast guy. I was on the Lincoln and the Kitty Hawk, and I did about 44 combat sorties in Operation Southern Watch.
Wow.
Got off active duty, and you ready for this? Mm. September 1st was my first and essentially last day at work at American Airlines. I got hired. I got picked up by a reserve squadron at Naval Air Station Fort Worth called the Hunters. So I was flying F-18s for the reserves, and I had that Gucci airline job in DFW. That was the dream. If you talk naval aviation, it's to be an airline pilot and to fly jets on the weekend. Well, I'm packing literally the morning of 9/11 was my supposed to go from DFW to Miami to Cancun. First flight as a pilot. And my wife came out and said, hey, man, you better come take a look at the TV. I'm like, hey, man, I'm packing. She's like, no, get out here. Somebody hit the World Trade Center.
Wow.
Came out there. And, you know, I'm thinking some idiot in a small airplane in bad weather. Beautiful day. Big smoking hole. And as I'm going through my mental aviation checklist of, okay, boom, second plane hits. I'm like, that's it. We're under attack. Based into the bedroom. Literally, I still have in the guest room my American Airlines uniform. It's still in the plastic.
Wow.
It's never been taken out. I pushed it out of the way, got my flight suit, got it half on, boots, didn't even tire them. And I think I broke the land speed record getting out to Naval Air Station Fort Worth. Got out there just as they went to ThreatCon Delta closed. I made it out with one of my Hornet buddies. His name was Gruff. Call sign was Gruff. And four of the Texas Air National Guard guys, the F-16 guys, made it out before the base was closed. We called down to maintenance, said, Chief, get the jets ready. We talked to the F-16 guys. They, you know, the Air Force, since they're not here, we can talk bad about them.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They tied into NORAD, the North American Air Defense, and they're like, hey, guys, get over here. So we were in their command post. We got two Hornets. They got four F-16s. They loaned us some missiles. And as we're briefing, Navy, Air Guard guys, we're briefing to get airborne, the Pentagon gets hit.
Wow.
We're like, race, man. Let's get going here. It was surreal. So the Tang, the F-16 guys stood, they got airborne first, and then we stood counter-rotating alert 15s. And it was nuts. I remember going home that night, just crashing on my flight suit, smell of sweat, angst, and just tears. Went in the next day to the squadron, and for the first time in my career, we actually had rules of engagement for the United States. So the guys are sitting in the ready room reading. It was like we were in literally a war zone.
Yeah.
It said 25 miles around Washington is a free fire area.
Wow.
I'm sitting here reading this. I'm like, are we not on the boat in combat? This is America. I made national news September 14th. You guys remember each day they tried to get the airspace open?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They didn't. Next day, we promise. Well, September 14th, I was sitting alert. And I think down in Crawford, where President Bush's prohibited airspace was, it turned out to be this old, I think it was a grandfather with his grandson. He gets airborne in this little, we get scrambled on this dude.
Wow.
So I get airborne out of Fort Texas, full armament, full bag of gas, and we get out of Fort Worth supersonic. Usually you can't go supersonic over the United States because you break all the windows, but it was combat rules. Mm-hmm. And we intercepted this guy. I was hauling ass. And I locked this guy up. He's doing like all of 80 miles an hour on the radar. Like I'm like a dog on the kitchen floor, man. It took me like three turns, idle, speed brake, put my landing gear down to slow down to even get as slow as this guy. He ended up, you know, landing in this grass strip, and we circled overhead until like these black Suburbans and Texas Rangers came up to him. But it turned out being an old guy or something like that. But
holy lack of self-awareness, Batman. What? Yeah, I think I'll take my Cessna for a spin today. This seems like a clear day. Yeah, wow.
At crowded airspace, DFW, there ain't one airplane in it. That was the really eerie part, was flying back after we intercepted him. You know, the controllers were like, hey, guys, you can go wherever the hell you want. You're it. And this airborne White House. So we literally flew over DFW at a couple hundred feet, and it looked like, you know, a Charlton Heston movie, you know, just hundreds of airliners scattered all over the place. It was creepy. Here's the funniest part. You ready? As I'm sitting in the ready room telling all the guys how cool I am on this intercept, my phone rings, and it goes, hey, First Officer Buckley, you know, are you ready for your first flight? I'm like, I thought it was one of the buddies, you know, went in the hallway and playing a joke on me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever, dude. He's like, this is Steve from Crew Scheduling. You have a flight tomorrow morning. I'm like, are you for real? He's like, yeah. I'm like, do you have a TV or any situation? Do you have a brain? And he's like, are you refusing your trip? Meaning if you don't come tomorrow, you're going to be fired. I'm like, I'll be there, man. So I go out to DFW that next day, September 15th. And the guy, my check airman, my instructor's like shocked that I even showed up. He's like, dude, I don't even think I have a job. You know, so we fly. I have one flight for America. We fly from DFW down here to Miami. And it was about 35 people on board. And it was all American Airlines employees from Miami who got stuck in DFW during the attacks. We're on the way down. And even the captain, he's been at American for 20 some years. He's like, man, I don't even think I have a job. He's like, hey, Wiz, I got furloughed once. It was like 1990. I was in Ohio. These freaking American Airlines, they furloughed me on a trip. They didn't even give me a ride home. I'm like, wow, that's a nice company. I shit you guys negative. We get to the crash hotel, the double inn or double tree, whatever, in Miami. I'm checking in. The captain's on his cell phone over there. He gets off his cell phone. He comes up to me. He's like, hey, Wiz, man, you're never going to believe this. That was crew scheduling. You're furloughed, and I need to confiscate your ID.
Wow.
I got furloughed on the road. In Miami, one flight.
That's wild. I mean, I've heard a lot of, you know, where were you on 9/11 stories, especially coming from the military.
Yeah.
But that certainly is up there with, in terms of reacting right away, because not many people reacted right away. So to be a pilot on that day was probably pretty hectic. And then the week leading up to it, after it.
It gives, when I was in it, it all made, everything we did made sense at that moment. Mm. We reacted against. But when I look back on it, it literally is the first chapter of my book, I get chills because it was almost like Lexington and Concord. It was a bunch of guys sitting at home and saw us under attack. And what do we do? Well, shit, man, get out to the base, man up the jet. And I literally on that day, we thought, what, all these cities were going to be attacked. So we were like antsy to get airborne and to fight. And
then
somebody sucker punched us. and now I'm going to kick the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what the...
We'll put a boot up your ass. It's the American way.
So yeah, then you, I mean, then you continued to serve, beyond that first week, correct?
So here's the funny part. Here's how I got to owning and starting the company I did. Back, you all know, you don't need the military to get rich. It's probably the last thing, but I was always interested in finance. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad read like the Atlantic City Press before he went to work, and I'd eat breakfast, and I'm like, "Dad, what's this? These hieroglyphics on the paper?" He's like, "Well, no, those are stock symbols." Mm-hmm. And he kind of explained, "Hey, man, if you go to McDonald's today and get your Happy Meal, you know, their stock price could go up." And that was it. Always stuck with me. So when I was a young Lieutenant JG out in beautiful Lemoore, California, that's being sarcastic. Yeah. I taught myself how to trade stocks, mm-hmm. and then also. Because options are, you know, why buy the cow when you get milk for free, so to speak. So I applied everything I was learning flying a fighter jet. Because when you think about it, trading is a form of combat. Somebody's going to win.
Right.
And so why would I not be applying everything I'm doing in a jet? Having a strategy, implementing tactics, contingency planning. You guys know that before we go on a mission, we go, how are we going to get killed? So before I ever place any trade, I'm like, how am I going to lose money on this? So it seemed like common sense to me to apply that to my trading, mm-hmm. and it worked incredibly well. My returns were really good, and eventually I popped up on the radar of one of the largest volatility arbitrage trading firms in the world, headquartered in the Board of Trade. And they said, hey, man, do what you do up here. And I can be honest with you, I love trading places. I felt like Valentine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't. Kung Fu Grip and Orange Futures. So they brought me up. It was a great company. They said, hey, man, I said, what would I do here? And they're like, we don't know. We just hire good people and we figure it out. So short story long, I essentially was called a managing director of strategy for this company. And then I was the founder and CEO of the Options News Network, kind of CNBC, but for options.
Okay.
No offense to anybody from the Midwest or Chicago. Love the people, but you can keep the freaking winners, man.
I have
to walk the Board of Trade to Union Station, and in February, it's like a survival situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Not fun.
So then you just decided, I'm going to open up my own shop and teach this to exclusively veterans transitioning or anybody who wants to learn?
Anybody. I mean, initially, that was the easiest network to tap into.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as you guys know, it ain't rocket surgery, what they taught us in the military. They just put it in some nice, condensed, you know, easy for Marines. Used
Barney style. Break it down Barney style for us.
So, it's open to everybody, but we do have a lot of vendors, a lot of retired folks as well.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I just, you know, from what I know about, you know, the finance world and obviously the little I do know about being a fighter pilot, because I wasn't one, I would imagine there are a lot of, as you mentioned, there's a lot of crossover, you know, a lot of trust in your gut. So how much of your military service do you impose on the curriculum that you teach at your options trading school?
I got to tell you, man, it's probably 95%. The other 5% is just kind of learning the market. Mm-hmm. But everything else, the motto at Top Gun Options is discipline, risk management, and that equals superior execution. Mm-hmm. People are shocked to hear when I talk about an options trade and they talk about a fighter pilot managing risk. They're like, you've got to be the riskiest, you know, that's one of the riskiest professions in the world. And that's where I'm like, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. It's actually not. You know, combat is, as you all know, there's enough unknowns to channel my inner Rumsfeld. There's enough unknown unknowns that if you didn't do a lot of planning and have everything in one sock, so to speak, you're an idiot. You're going to get killed.
Right.
So I use all of it, man. I got to be honest with you. I have a live trade brief at 1 o'clock. Before we put on a trade, I say, what is our max risk? We never look at, hey, I can make $5,000 in this trade. No. If you look there first, I'm going to crack your knuckles like Sister Mary. You have got to look at your max risk. Mm. And the other thing we do is we figure out when we're going to get out of this trade. I call it the Colin Powell rule, so to speak. He said, when he was ordered to get Iraq out of Kuwait, he said, you got that, President Bush. Hold up before you leave the room. What is victory? When are we getting out? Mm-hmm. He's like, I've been through Vietnam. I ain't doing this again. Tell me what victory is. So before I ever get into a trade, it's just like going on a mission. When I hit this fuel state, whatever I'm doing, I turn and point towards home. It's called bingo. I'm bingo fuel man, and I'm leaving. Because the ocean or sides of mountains are littered with gals and guys who flew through their bingo or who weren't disciplined. So the hardest thing for folks when they learn trading is to have the discipline that we all have. It's like, hey, man, if it said this, you do this. Because most traders, you know, I put this Apple trade on and it's going against me. But Apple doesn't hate me. It'll come back. Dude, Apple doesn't even know you exist. Right. And they would steamroll over your house, you know, to make a buck. So I'd say 95% of what I did in the military translates. And it's funny because every once in a while I'll do a webinar and people are like, wait, I'm not military. Will I get this? I'm like, dude, I'm a political science major, knuckle-dragging fighter pilot. If I can do it,
you're
overqualified.
Right.
And that's your book is from sea level to sea level. I'm a sucker for a good play on words. From sea level to sea level, a fighter pilot's journey from the front lines to the office. And so this book, this is something if you're interested in learning about how to get into the world of stocks and stuff like that, like is this picking up this book?
It's less about investing. This literally tells the story of me going from sea level in the Navy to sea level in a Wall Street trading firm. So it's more about if you're transitioning or you're currently a military, a veteran in the business world, you need this.
Yeah.
It wasn't an easy transition. I got to be honest with you. What do we do? And in the Army, as you know, it was an after action report. In the Marines, we call it a debrief. Mm-hmm. Businesses do not do this. And if they do, what do they call it? A post-mortem, right? I mean, who the hell would go to a post-mortem? I mean, I think I'm going to one in my life, and I better not be awake for it.
Only if there's a hoagie tray. It's the only time I'll show up to one of those.
So, and here's another thing. As you all know, in the military, we had single points of accountability. I call them SPAs. I remember being in that trading firm, and one day – we had a problem getting quotes from the Philadelphia Exchange, the PhilEx, to the floor. Lost millions of dollars. So at the end of the day, I get these seven tech directors in a room. I'm like, all right, who's in charge of getting quotes from the PhilEx to us? Cricket. I'm like, okay, maybe it's a language barrier. It's Yuri and the guy from China. Who's responsible? Turns out it wasn't a language barrier. After like three times asking this group, they're like, well, Yuri kind of does this, and Steve does that, and Jill and the rocket fires, and the mouse eats the cheese. I'm like, everybody shut up. I'm like, who owns this? There might be seven of you doing it. Which one of you, Manny, Moe's, or Jax, owns it? So this book really is, it's kind of a guide to, because I got to be honest with you, I've helped place generals or high-ranking folks. They usually have a horrible time transitioning to the business world. Because they've been
so indoctrinated so much longer than maybe a junior officer.
You got it. Yeah, that getting out of the JO is you'll be successful in business world. These generals, man, they just can't cage their gyro to businesses operate like this. I don't know how many times I give a keynote, or it's funny because before I work with a company, I send them like a 25-page briefing document. What are your threats? Who's your competition? You know, I ask them all this stuff, and I gotta be honest with you, 80% of the companies that I work with around the world, they make money in spite of themselves. It's a clown car, man. There aren't points of accountability. They don't debrief. There is no strategy. They don't red team. You guys know, before we went on a mission, we didn't push back from the table and say, we're brilliant. There's no way anything can go wrong.
Yeah.
Go get three squadron mates to come in and rip that plan to shreds. Because I tell, and it's so funny because I love talking to friends here because you guys are like, duh. But when you say this to a group of business people, I'm like, hey, man, if you don't red team your plan, who's going to do it for you?
Mm-hmm.
And usually this person goes, wait a minute, our competition. I'm like, yeah, your enemy's going to red team that plan real time, and they're going to love to do it.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff that we take for granted as military folks ain't. It's literally rocket surgery to the business world, and they think you're brilliant. I'm an idiot.
Absolutely.
So I put that all in the book.
So, you're talking about this book. You have your Top Gun Options School. You're doing a lot of great things to help veterans transition out of the military, and one thing we saw this week signed into law was the VA Mission Act, and I know you had some thoughts on the VA Mission Act, having served in the military yourself and now helping veterans.
I got to be honest with you, man. I can't MF the VA bad enough. It makes me furious. During my 15 years as a Navy fighter pilot, I was also an LSO, as you guys know, a landing signal officer. So when I wasn't flying, I was on the back of a boat, 20 feet. You guys know when they run around on the flight deck, they got foamies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They got Mickey. They got double hearing protection. As an LSO, I'm 20 feet away from a Tomcat and fully afterburner. I need to hear the engine. So at night, or because you'll hear the engine before the smoke, or I can't hear anything today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my back from pulling 9 G's over 15 years, my back's killing me. I put in my VA stuff, zero.
Wow.
Denied.
That doesn't make sense,
like,
even
no.
a little bit.
Are you shitting me that you – I didn't even get like 0% disability. And if you Google it, it's like, oh, the number one – any military veteran in high noise areas.
Oh, yeah, you get the tinnitus. It's like 10% automatic.
I have it right now. I have it. It's ringing in my ears. They denied me. I'm like, are there a shitload of vets trying to defraud this country? We got people running around out here with freaking Obama phones, for Christ's sake, or getting money from the government who should be picking up trash on the street that aren't. And you're going to deny me after 15 years of serving this country? I'm furious with the VA. So I think it's great. You know, it's shocking to me the president actually had to get a law passed so he could fire people who were in Arizona lying about their wait times, and dudes and ladies were dying. Mm. I'm furious. The VA is an absolute shithole. And I have an attorney. I had to get a VA attorney who specializes in I'm not doing it for money, obviously, guys. I'm doing it for the damn point now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, for my kids, I'm furious, and I apologize for going overboard. But
no.
I can't believe the day that got back to me. I'm like, are you shitting me? Here's a picture of me 10 feet from a Tomcat in full afterburner.
Right.
And I got foamies on. You're going to tell me I don't have hearing loss from that. So
they're like, actually, you owe us money every month now. We're going to need you to send us. We need your firstborn son. And
I'm at a loss for words. It's a step in the right direction. I think the president's doing it. You know, obviously, compared to the Manchurian candidate we had for 8 years, this dude actually cares. But we're hopefully for my son, like I said, Matthew wants to go in the Marines, and I got to give a shout out to my middle son, Jack. He's actually at Naval Sea Cadet Camp in the middle of Florida right now. I dropped him off, and
awesome.
He graduates on Sunday. So he wants to be – so if I drop Matthew on his head because he wants to be a Marine, Jack wants to drive boats. He wants to be a surface warfare officer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. So I'm like going to curl up in the corner and suck my thumb, man. But no, so hopefully the VA is unfornicated by the time they serve their country, because I got to be honest with you guys, though, it's my fault, because when I got out, you guys know the transition classes, right? They're mm-hmm. like, anything wrong with you? All of us who were going to the airlines, what do we say?
We're fine.
Great. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But if I tell I got hearing loss or I'm a complete shit show, FedEx, I flew for FedEx for a little bit, they're going to find out and I can't fly for them. Of course, there was a couple of those smart dudes that were like, no, dude. Tell them you got everything wrong with you. Tell them you got freaking, you know, you're a leper.
Yeah, every last thing that's in your medical records.
Yeah.
But the gap was, and I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I need my airline career. So that's one of the other reasons they denied it. They're like, you said there was nothing wrong with you. I'm like, are you mental? But this attorney specializes in dealing with guys like me who, like, obviously, the one time you lie in your life and it blows up in your face. So I should have told the truth that all that shit was wrong. But I was scared of losing my airline job.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
But yeah, that's small. Yeah, it's a tough situation there. But we also, I had a couple questions for you on some small things.
Maybe on a little bit of a lighter note.
On a lighter note. As a Top Gun guy, how much volleyball did you play?
It wasn't about the volleyball. It was all about the lube.
Ooh.
And the baby oil.
Question two. I'm satisfied with that answer. Question two. Did you ever snap your teeth at someone in a locker room and tell them they were dangerous?
Not with the lights on.
No, all right. And number three, it reads here that you have 2 Strike Flight Air Medals presented to you by the President of the United States. What is that? And what was it for, if you don't mind me asking?
My Air Medals are about as worthless as a Navy expert pistol ribbon.
Don't be modest.
Listen, I did 44, they called them combat sorties, over southern Iraq. So we were doing, I was an airborne cop. What was it? Chief Wiggum on The Simpsons, Sky Police.
Yeah.
I was Sky Police in south of the 32nd parallel or in the 33rd. So I don't think I saw a bird fly during my mission. Some guys got shot at. I think they dropped a couple bombs randomly. But I'll tell you, my flying going through Top Gun was more challenging than any Iraqi mission. We actually called southern Iraq like our MOA, our military operating area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually sent students over there to train.
Yeah.
But as you all know, we are our worst enemy. So whenever we go somewhere in the world, it's almost a letdown. So I got to be honest with you. I used to write letters during my OSW missions. You know, the carrier landing was the combat mission, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Anytime, even daylight, as soon as you get to the end of the catapult stroke, the first thing, it ain't getting gas, it ain't the mission, the first thing you're thinking about is, I got to land back aboard this thing.
Right,
yeah.
And if it's night, man, as soon as you get airborne, you're like, ah, crap, I got a night trap coming up ahead of me. And we lost, you know how many people we lost in during combat operations? Zero. You know how many we lost in workups getting ready to go to Iraq? Eight.
Eight, right. Yeah.
Eight airs. Flat hatting into a condo in Nashville. We had a prowler that go, three dudes clipped. I mean, we lost eight getting ready to go on deployment.
Yeah.
We lost on deployment.
So, I mean, I know the Navy loved that movie for all the great recruiting it did, but what is the feeling among Navy pilots about Tom Cruise and Anthony Edwards?
Well, first of all, I hated that movie. You guys can do the math. I was a junior in high school,
okay.
And I told you guys, from moment memory one in my life, I always wanted to be a naval aviator.
Mm-hmm.
I will be honest, I got admitted. I tried to get nominated to the Naval Academy. I got the Air Force Academy.
Yeah.
And wants to work with the JV team. So Top Gun came out in the middle of me being in high school going, I'm going to sneak through and I'm going to fly jets for the Navy. That movie came out. Everybody and their freaking mother wanted to be a Navy fighter pilot. I'm like, yeah. Son of a... So in college, I had to work even harder because now everybody wanted to do it.
Right.
The movie, it's comical. I mean, everybody asks about, is it realistic? You can do anything once in an airplane, and it's your last time. So
yeah.
I'm good for recruiting for the Navy, but I got to be honest with you. I think the last generation of fighter pilots might be my son Matthew. It's drones, it's UAVs,
yeah.
it's not a good future for fighter pilots.
We were just talking about that before you came on. We were going to ask you about that because we feel like that's the tides are changing. It's like with airborne in the Army, they say, you know, it's
right.
People don't like to talk about it.
Yeah.
But
I got to be honest with you, I'd love to give the guy credit. I don't. Four-star admiral, he wrote a great paper on how using drones and all that type of stuff makes war actually more likely. I was like, okay, I got to read this. He's got a great point. So when you send, if we send Wiz and he gets shot down, they put him in a cage, they light him on fire, it's on TV,
mm-hmm.
and lose the public. Send a $250 million drone or whatever it is. Oh, we lost it. Okay, send another one. So now we got almost this Terminator drone v drone going
right.
on until somebody in an air-conditioned room goes, well, this is dumb. Go find out where they're launching the drones from and kill all those people. So it actually it makes more war antiseptic. I remember I did a road trip when I was in the Hunters in Fort Worth, a road trip out to – I needed flight time, so we went out to Nellis in Vegas. A buddy of mine, he had been furloughed too. He went back on active duty in the Air Force, and he was literally – we went out to a local folk dancing club, but literally
– Of course, as one does.
Hours before, he had literally – he's like, dude, I think I killed about 24 guys in a strike about a couple hours ago, and here I am at the local folk dancing club getting drunk. He's like
– As one does.
It makes it antiseptic. As you all know, combat's awful. It's horrible. And General MacArthur said the soldier is the one who prays the most for peace because we see the horror of it. So the whole drone thing, it's – yay, but in the end of the day, it's going to be very bad.
Right.
In the long.
Interesting to see what direction that goes in for sure.
Absolutely.
But I will say, for the time that we're in now, we sure are glad that people like you were up above looking out. And your stories, though, your stories are way more exciting than all of mine. And I feel very silly now. He trumped both my why I joined and my 9/11 day story by a landslide. But wow, I was, and you're the first person to get me actually interested in trading and stuff like that. And now that the military analogy, I think it's brilliant. And I just think
you don't need a lot of money. I think a brokerage account at any broker, you can start with like $1,000. And like I said, if you wanted to buy 1,000 shares of Apple today, what would you need? Like 1.7, whatever. But
something
if you wanted
ridiculous.
To control. Yeah, if you wanted to control that same amount for an option, all it is a contract, man.
Mm-hmm.
You control that instead of owning the damn thing. So you can learn how to – and thank God for Naval Aviation. I just copied and pasted. If you look on my website, primary, intermediate, and advanced.
Yeah.
I that we learned in the military, demo do. I'll demonstrate how to do something, you do. Mm-hmm. And I strongly recommend, almost every broker has what's called a paper trading account. So you open a paper trading account at Brand X, Thinkorswim, Fidelity. They give you like $100,000 of play money. It's the simulator.
Yeah.
So this is what I tell people. I didn't read a book on aerodynamics and run out to the Hornet and get airborne. I would have been dead in 2 seconds. We had to go where? To the simulator building, man. You sit the engine failure, engine fire. Yeah. So open a paper trading account and just you do. And then you get better. But now you guys got your great stories. I read about your background. It's funny because my Matthew and Jack, they're like, you're doing this interview with those guys. on Instagram. But I'm like, oh, shit, that's these guys.
Yeah.
So actually honored to meet you guys, and if you're ever down here in South Florida, I'd love to you guys around.
Well, speaking of to kind of end out the show, Kanz and I have a little surprise for you. We have both scrounged up all the money in our wallets, and we're going to let you be our prime investor for the next few years. How do you feel about that?
I have never been honored in my entire life.
You're welcome. Perfect. You're welcome.
Can't wait to be a millionaire.
Again, the book is called From Sea Level to Sea Level, A Fighter Pilot's Journey from the Front Lines to the Front Office. He is the head of Top Gun Options, a multi-million dollar trading options trading school. Is there a website or a link or anything you want to throw out there?
Like when I started, it was a small marketing department, me. So go to topgunoptions.com.
That's simple
Topgunoptions.com.
And then my Twitter is I'm out of Twitter jail. Obviously, if you post anything conservative now, so Wiz check six, the number six. So you guys know what check six
right.
means. It means look, check out behind you. So Wiz check six, and then on Instagram, it's just my name, E Matthew Buckley.
Cool.
Edward Matthew. Yeah, E Matthew Buckley, and I post a lot of off color. Well, you know what? I don't want to say off color stuff because it's the truth, man. I mean, it seems like nowadays you say the truth and people look at you like you know, you got five heads. But thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. You've been hearing your stories has been great, and we're really happy to have you as a guest. So thank you, and shout out to your sons. If they're followers of ZBT, they must be pretty cool.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Wiz.
All right. Thanks, Pilot. Fucking nerd.
Pilot Wiz.
Pilot Wiz.
I will say, it was cool. You know, you hear plenty of people. You can ask anybody, you know, where were you on 9/11? But to hear his story of how it was extremely real for him to get spun up and, you know, thinking maybe I got to go get in my plane right now.
Very impressive. And it's kind of a relief to know those people are out there.
Right.
Like on at moment's notice who are ready to do that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was definitely cool talking to him.
Yep.
And cool nickname.
Yeah,
gotta love the Wiz.
Have you guys been following the World Cup at all?
The extent that I've seen the World Cup is when I walk through the Port Authority each day to get on the bus, and they've been playing it on very large screens, and people have just been standing around Port Authority watching the games.
Yeah, I've been catching clips of it in bars.
Yeah.
But I wish I get really into the women's. When the USA is every summer, but
the team's so good.
Yeah, if America's not in something, I don't give a fuck. Even if it's
it's
Wimbledon or the British Open, if America's not doing great, I don't really pay nearly as much of attention as I do if not. But if I was going to go to Russia to go to the World Cup, I'd probably use our friends at SeatGeek. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually use SeatGeek to get tickets to the Giants and Jags game. It's week one, not week two, like I said on High Haters. I cannot wait. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value. Plus, each and every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Just download the SeatGeek app to enter the promo code CHAPS today. That's promo code CHAPS for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I mentioned the World Cup primarily because whenever I've had it on this morning. It's the first time I've watched any of it. So when I had it on this morning, I hear the ole, 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 ole,
ole, ole,
ole,
ole.
And as soon
me and my cousins do that when we're drinking. We do. We always do that.
As soon as that shit goes into my head, I hear it for weeks. Like, even while I'm sleeping.
Ole, 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 ole.
Do you guys have that whenever you're, like, sleeping and you hear songs or you, like, sing songs in your head while you're sleeping?
Yes.
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 It
yep.
drives me fucking wild, man. Yesterday, I wrote a blog that I included Queen song. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. When we got done with the radio show last night, I'm sitting down with my head on the pillow, and all I hear is fucking Freddie Mercury's voice, like, in my head over and over. I want to
bicycle.
Dude, that was driving me fucking insane. I felt like I was in Abu Ghraib. Like, it was terrible.
Maybe you messed up. Maybe his ghost was in the room visiting you, and you messed up and didn't open your eyes. You were just annoyed, and you missed a cool opportunity with Freddie Mercury.
Oh, if Freddie Mercury's ghost came to my room, I'd fuck Freddie Mercury's ghost.
Oh, yeah, hands down. He'd be an excellent, I'm just saying. The guy could move.
That'd be an excellent ghost story.
Yeah, the guy can move.
Except for the ghost AIDS part.
Yeah, well, I don't think you can get ghost HIV. I think they cured that.
I don't think you can. I think you're free and clear once you're up there. You can do whatever you want, and you're good.
Fuck whatever you want.
Freddie Mercury still would.
That's part
he
of the
He probably wouldn't want me, but...
You know what I would wear if I was going to fuck Freddie Mercury?
What?
Some Muggsy jeans. Muggsy jeans are stylish, and they are as comfortable as sweatpants. You heard it here first. Jeans are stylish and literally as comfortable as sweatpants. Literally. Just last week, we were talking about how good jeans feel, like a hug for your legs. When I put my Muggsy on, I feel like my legs are wrapped in a pack of golden retriever puppies. They're so soft and flexible. It's mind-blowing. Added bonus, not only are they outrageously comfortable in Muggsy, but you also look good as fuck in them. Because Muggsy comes in a stylish fit, and I'm not talking about ball crunching, I look like I'm going to wear my girlfriend's jeans. I'm talking clean fit that's not too baggy. You kind of look like Connor. And did I mention that Muggsy jeans give you superpowers? Since I started wearing them, I've been irresistible to women, which my wife hates, unstoppable in bear fights, and I can punt a ball 100 yards with ease, all while wearing my Muggsy. Obviously, some of that is exaggerated. One of my bear fights ended in a draw, and it's all pretty accurate description of what's where. This is the best ad read I've ever read. Now, some of them may be thinking that these sound too good to be true, and that's not the case here, fellas. But if you're still in doubt, Muggsy has free and easy return and exchanges, so you have nothing to lose. The only question is, should you be asking yourself, I don't have a pair yet? That's a really good question. I'm here to help you out with that. Go to MuggsyJeans.com. Use the promo code CHAPS to get $10 off their selection of lightweight, super breathable summer styles. That's MuggsyJeans.com to snag a pair of your favorite jeans today, or chinos, MuggsyJeans.com.
They won me over with that ad.
They won me over, too. And their shit legitimately is comfortable. Like, they had the ad read out, but they are comfortable jeans. Like, I wore them on a flight last time because I'm usually a shorts guy. Like, 90% of the year, because I live in San Antonio, I'm a shorts guy. Not on a plane. Can't do it on a plane. I feel like it's gross. I even wear flip-flops around. Won't do that on a plane either.
Hey, speaking of jeans and the World Cup, but body jeans... like DNA. Did you see what Burger King did in Russia?
Yes.
They had an ad up offering free burgers to Russian women if they got pregnant by World Cup players.
That's a good deal.
That's a pretty good deal. Whoppers. They would get Whoppers. And then they got yelled at, and now they took it down.
What? Yeah, but that you know what that reminded me of? That reminded me when I'd be out on patrol in Iraq, and obviously you're in the Middle East. You expect people to look a certain way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you'd see a group of kids running around and you'd see a young girl or boy who had very fair skin and blonde hair. And you just thought, there's a war baby.
Yep. Russia. Those Russians. But they said they
Kosovo,
wanted to reward.
Lots of Kosovo people. Yeah. Serbians. Oh, yeah.
They wanted the best football genes to ensure the success of the Russian team for generations to come. I just love when companies do stuff. That is. It really is. I'm pretty sure China does that. They because they have those little Olympic camps from the time the kids are 2 years old.
Yeah. You know what I bet? You know who I bet was wearing Muggsy jeans?
Who?
Was that Marine who jumped over the White House fence.
Oh, absolutely. You need a good stretch to get over the fence.
What happened there again?
Probably not, because if you're wearing Muggsy jeans, you're making good choices. That dude's making bad choices.
That's true. I'm looking it up right now. The gist of it was, obviously, he has a little bit of mental things going on, but he believed that the birds were telling him to jump the fence and call Trump a bitch, I believe. And then once he got over the fence and they were coming at him, he asked everyone if they wanted to see God.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Well, they've been talking in the news about
if you jump the White House fence, you're very close to it already at seeing God.
Yes. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, I believe he was asking them to shoot him, too. He was just...
So maybe he did want to see God.
Maybe he did want to see God, but I'm glad he didn't, and hopefully they get him the help that he needs. But, yeah, I mean, come on. Got to be a little proud of the Marines.
I guess. You know, you guys got no quit in you.
I mean,
no.
At least he says, still knows how to scale a wall.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
I want to talk a little bit about the – we talked about him before, the West Point communist guy.
Right. So Second Lieutenant Spencer Rapone?
Yeah. So he got kicked out of the Army recently, and military Twitter was in like an uproar because he got kicked out, and the PFC – I think he was a PFC or a Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps who was – a neo-Nazi at one of the rallies in Charlottesville and actually punched a woman. He wasn't kicked out right away. He was just reduced to E1. It's such a misunderstanding of, like, military policy and how things go. Like, it's – he resigned – the one guy resigned his commission with a it was other than honorable.
Other than honorable.
Right?
Yes, other than honorable.
Which sucks and, for an officer. Like, that
oh,
is –
oh, it sucks for an officer. Good luck getting a job. And also, this guy's name is plastered all over the place, so – I don't think that's going to work out too well for him, and I'm pretty sure he's going to have to pay
$300,000.
That's what I was going to ask
education.
You.
Education.
Yeah, no, if you don't do 4 years, right, isn't it, or is it two?
Five. It's five years.
And to let people know, like, if you don't remember this, last summer at West Point at his graduation, inside his cap, he had written, it said, communism will win inside of it, and then he also ran a Twitter account that was extremely pro-communism, and, like, he was very open about it. So that's what...
And in the, I mean, across the military, we are not supposed to express any sort of political views while in uniform, mm-hmm. and this has really taken that to the nth degree. So I'm happy he's no longer in the Army. I think he's a disgrace to the uniform. I think he's a disgrace to my alma mater. And $300,000 is not an amount of money that you have just lying in the couch cushions.
No,
so
it's going to be
hard
when
paying that back, too.
I think that he will go on to be like – one of those dudes who's a political commentator. Like, I think that's what he'll do is, like, write about communism and do all that shit. And he will have – for that sect of society, I think he will gain a huge following through that. So I think –
oh, yeah. He already has a lot of supporters. So I don't know. I think people will help lift him up and get him through this. And he just posted a picture the other day flipping off the Fort Drum sign as he was heading out. He was done, other than honorable. But yeah, seems like an interesting fella. I follow him on Twitter.
Do you really?
I do.
Maybe we should have him on the podcast.
Yeah, punk proletarian for anybody who wants to be weirded out a little bit.
And the same day, the Marine Corps announced that Lance Corporal Vasilos Pistilis, I assume that's Greek, was found guilty at a summary court-martial and hit with 28 days confinement, a reduction in rank, and pay forfeiture, yet he will remain a Marine on his release. That's not true. Like, there's a lot of reports that are saying that what is going to happen with this guy is that he is reduced to E1. Once you go to a summary court-martial and they reduce an enlisted person to E1, no matter what rank you were before, you are done. That is it. You're found guilty at a summary court-martial. You are going to be administratively discharged going forward with an other than honorable condition, too. The only caveat there is that the other than honorable condition will be moved up. It can be moved up 60 to 90 days after you get out to just a general discharge, which I think in a lot of cases is the right thing to do. Obviously, this guy's a piece of shit. Like, if you're a white nationalist, you're a piece of shit. Like,
absolutely.
No question about it. You just are.
You punch a woman, you're a piece of shit.
And I'm looking at a picture of this kid as he's in, and he's beating the shit out of someone who's already hurt on the ground. He's beating the shit out of somebody with a wooden stick. Like, get this kid the fuck out of here. Sorry, I hate this kid.
Yeah, he's absolutely trash. But the Marine Corps, I feel like, did the right thing here. Because if he was convicted of assault at the military level, he can't be charged for it out in town. Like, he cannot be charged for it in the civilian world, and it wouldn't be, like, considered a felony conviction. Now, because the Marine Corps charged him only under UCMJ articles for things that didn't have to do with the assault, they can remove him from the Marine Corps. Like, I'll speak from personal experience, even though I don't like to talk about this shit. Whenever I got in trouble, the Marine Corps had the option of saying, you are gone in 10 days. Luckily for me, they knew my story, and they knew, like, a lot of the actual facts about what happened, not what was written in the newspapers. So they knew some of that, so my commanding officer was like, no, we're going to see it through to the end, so you can, like, get VA benefits, so you can retire, so you can do all these things. The Marine Corps had the option with this kid, too, especially when it's a public disgrace type of case, like this clearly is. They could have moved him out. They didn't do that, so he can get his shit done in the Marine Corps, get dishonorably discharged or other than honorable discharge, and then go on and get the felony charges from the civilian courts. Because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, if they charge him, he's not going to – if they kick him out of the Marines, he's not going to sit in jail as a Marine. So ultimately he's going to get what's coming to him.
And
now
he's still getting 20 – yeah, like you said, 28 days of confinement, cutting his pay, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, hopefully they turn him over and he gets slapped all over again.
And that's what he deserves.
I'm sure he will. So bad look for the Marine Corps, bad look for the Army. They need to fucking get rid of those dudes, man. Like, any time that shit happens – and just administratively discharge them, because you can.
Right.
Both services have that option of administrative discharge right away. I don't understand why they're not using it more until it becomes a huge problem like this. But And what was the question that we got last night on High Haters about Secretary Mattis? Do you remember?
Oh, somebody was saying that he's really been flying under the radar lately, and it seems like whenever Trump announces a new policy or new this or that, Mattis seems to kind of be distant from it, or either be kind of unaware of that it was something that was going to be announced, or he doesn't seem to be as fully into everything as he used to be. And he was wondering if Mattis is going to be the next to go. And I said, no, the White House will never, Mattis will actually be there for the next 100 years. He's digging. Do you know this? He's dug in there now.
No,
he's got little foxholes all over the White House.
Oh,
and he's like sneaking out and slitting throats. Yeah. He's like become a real menace there. I don't think they're going to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I don't think so either.
I think
he's very adept at not speaking out. You know, he's got such a distinguished military career. He knows that you don't speak out in public about your superiors. And in this case, the superior is President of the United States. He doesn't want to speak out, whether that's in favor or against him. And he's just being very professional about it.
Yeah, and I think the guy's question also had to deal with, like, the legacy of him. And I am choosing to separate the two, separate his Marine Corps career and his post, because I think that's the fair thing to do. I feel like that's the same thing with Colin Powell. Like, there's a lot of decisions that Colin Powell made, and I've talked about that on the podcast too. There's, like, for me, people that I revere for their services that are officers are Colin Powell and General Mattis. Like, those are my two that I look forward to. There's mistakes that Colin Powell made when he was the Secretary of State. Like, he's the one that said that there clearly is weapons of mass destruction when there wasn't. But you can separate the two, like, their military service and their political career afterwards. And that's what I'm choosing to do with.
Yeah.
But I don't even think Mattis has done anything substantial in terms of tarnishing his legacy post-Marine career.
I think that not being open about how many troops are in Afghanistan is a problem. I feel like not being forthright with the media and the American public about what's going on with wars on multiple fronts. I feel like what happened with the four soldiers who were killed, I believe it was in Somalia. Like, I feel like the not being forthright with families there is an issue. And that was the same issues that happened. That was why people were mad at the DOD with Pat Tillman's case too.
Like, right.
Right.
If what happened was a mistake, the military needs to own up to those mistakes. That's the only way we get better. And we teach about that at small unit levels constantly, like, that having accountability for your actions is the only way that we improve. And it seems like at the higher levels of military leadership, they're not as willing to take accountability for negative consequences. And if you can't identify discrepancies, you will not be able to find corrective actions.
I took a public relations class at adult night school once, so I'm kind of an expert on this. And if you study the cases time and time again throughout history, the most successful, when something goes wrong or something is difficult, the most successful cases where you end up coming out looking good is when the company is transparent.
Yeah.
And when they own up to what's going on, and it gives them like an almost human thing that people are empathetic to, as long as they're willing to try and correct it. But real quick,
That's why Michael Scott had the press conference at the paper company whenever there was an unfortunate watermark. Like, you have to get in front, you can't let the story control you.
No, you can't. And
year that Creed skipped his duties.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'm willing to give Mad Dog the benefit of the doubt. I think he's doing good things.
He's in Beijing next week after, you know, shit's really falling apart with China, gang. They had that a couple months ago. They had that 42 battleship parade across the South China Sea.
Right.
They're building islands. They are way ahead of us. I wrote about they're way ahead of us in the space race, guys. They're building up their space fleet.
If they get to Mars before us, I'm going to be fucking pissed.
Same here. There's no way. Hopefully, I think that's what Mattis is going over there to talk to them about.
Like, you better not.
Your role.
You better, like,
hey, better not.
You better Jeff's not go to Mars. It's the Mars. It's the Beijing Mars Summit with featuring General Mattis. So I can't wait to hear how this goes.
That should be fun.
But he is going over there to try and smooth things out with them and maybe give them the stink eye. I think a little side eye.
Give him Mattis the mad dog eye. I like it.
Yeah, two puffs, two big old puffs, side eyeing you.
All right. Any Saved Private alibis?
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys remember Friday? You know, you're getting ready to get released early, and you, your first hundred times, and then like, oh, you know, sir, commander, you got anything? Well, I'm going to pull one of those because I got a handful of things.
Oh my gosh, he's got a little piece of paper, everyone. Yeah.
First and foremost, chaps, AAR, three ups, three downs on your trip to Disney this year.
Oh, I like that.
Not going next year, tired of my children by the time I got back. But overall, very good trip. Loved spending time with Kelsey before she goes to her mom's house for the summer. Having those little daddy-baby moments are very important for us at the close of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
And having a room to myself was awesome because me and my wife got to do it like three times on vacation. We normally don't.
Hey!
So, that was pretty cool.
Woohoo! Chaps got laid.
That was pretty cool.
the picture on Splash Mountain, the Inception picture with that T-shirt was all time.
Yeah, and I can't wait to pick her little ass up from the airport with it. Last year I surprised her with wearing that, and this year's the face was even better. Like her face was
that's awesome.
Was consciously going into the ride thinking, I'm not going to make this ridiculous face, and she did. If you haven't seen it, it's on my Instagram. It's probably my favorite picture I've ever posted on Instagram.
Yeah, that's really cute.
It is. Okay, I got a badass of the week.
Ooh.
Got submitted, so Brandon hit the music. On June 13th, there were soldiers in 187 Infantry. They were awarded the Bronze Star Medal with Valor Device and the Army Commendation Medal with Valor Device for their heroic actions under fire. First Lieutenant Wojcicki, Specialist Cook, Specialist Shoemaker, and Staff Sergeant Atsuno of Alpha Company were awarded for valorous action on the night of 26 October 2016 while conducting a clearance operation in the Helmand Province. After beginning to clear a series of compounds, Taliban fighters pinned down their Afghan National Army partners. First Lieutenant Tyler Wojcicki, exposing himself to accurate small arms fire, held off an enemy advance that came within 25 meters using his M4 and hand grenades. His actions covered the unit's retrograde to a safer position and subsequent medevac of multiple casualties. During the retrograde, an ANA soldier was wounded by a pressure-plated IED. Specialist Braden Cook and an NCO from the ODA team braved this assault to retrieve the wounded Afghan soldier while the Taliban engaged with mortar fire. Meanwhile, Staff Sergeant Kevin Atsuno and Specialist Miles Shoemaker were making their way back from compound to compound. The Afghan forces around them had begun to abandon the fight, leaving security positions. Staff Sergeant Atsuno identified a rooftop that would provide good fields of fire. Special Shoemaker took an M240 Bravo from an ANA soldier who had retreated from his position and followed Staff Sergeant Atsuno onto the roof. The roof was void of any cover. Special Shoemaker fired it on advancing Taliban fighters with Staff Sergeant Atsuno marking targets until the weapon was no longer operable. First Lieutenant Wojcicki joined these two, and the team fired on the enemy until joint tactical air controllers could direct aerial strikes on the Taliban positions. First Lieutenant Wojcicki, Specialist Cook, and Specialist Shoemaker were awarded the Bronze Star Medal for Valor, and Staff Sergeant Atsuno was awarded the Army Commendation Medal for Valor. So I think it's great what they did, and so often we forget that there are still guys in Afghanistan fighting the good fight and doing great things over there, so it was important to mention them this week.
I was just thinking that as you said that. It's like, holy shit, like, you would think this is from a few years ago. No, this is from now.
It's 2 weeks ago. Full
still
blown,
happening. Yeah.
Full-blown mission. And
crazy.
Then two more things.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm keeping you guys late here on a Friday. Lieutenant General Robert Caslin, West Point's commandant, is retiring today, Friday, as you listen to this. After
is that the deer choker?
Yes. Chaps and I had the pleasure of speaking to him and interviewing him at the Army-Navy game 2 years ago. He is retiring after 43 years of service to the Army.
That's a lot of service.
Yes, it is a lot of service. And quite honestly, he's a big reason the Army football team has been able, and you know, the Army athletics in large part, have been able to turn around and get a lot better in a lot of sports due to the changes he's implemented at West Point, and he will be sorely missed. And then finally, last weekend I mentioned to you guys, I got to play golf with a very nice Vietnam veteran.
Oh, yeah.
Freddie.
That's right.
Freddie. He was great.
Shout out to
sometimes
Freddie.
When you go to a course and you got an opening in your group and you get paired with someone, you don't know what you're going to get. It could potentially be a horrific 18 holes, but it turned out that we had Freddie, and Freddie was great. He was doing commentary on our shots. He was really nice to speak to. He opened up about his service in Vietnam, thanked him for that service, and it ended up being a very enjoyable 18 holes thanks to having Freddie with us.
That's so awesome. Well, shout out
that's
to Freddie.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right, that's all I got.
Okay, I got one. I just got a quick one.
All right. There's a caveat off that.
This is like a true military meeting. Just a caveat on that caveat. Circle around on this. I fucked up and didn't let them know I needed a hotel last night.
Oh, yeah.
So by the time our guy who books them went to book me one, the cheapest ones were like $700. He's like, sorry, you're not Dave Portnoy. You can't have a hotel. So I was like, oh, shit. I was like acting really cool about it. I was like, no big deal. I'll figure it out. And then I went online and everything in the whole city, and this entire fucking city was booked except for a hostel down where the old tenements are in the Lower West Side. And so I stayed in a converted tenement last night in a bunk bed with six other women in the room.
Fucking, that's like the most Kate shit ever. Like every day, there's things that come out that I'm like, yeah, that makes sense completely. Like last night, you talking about that you camped overnight in order to get free Chick-fil-A for a while. You camped out outside in the wintertime in Philly for Chick-fil-A.
Yes. 365 days worth chicken sandwiches.
So it's like you're back in the barracks.
So it was like being back in the barracks. I saw it this morning. I was like, all right, let's just get up. Come on.
Were they smoking and joking in there?
Lights, lights, lights. No, they were all asleep. I went to drag karaoke last night. Didn't get until a little late, so they were all snoozing. And I was the first one up in there this morning, too. Bunch of lazies.
No discipline.
Yeah, but anyways, that's my exciting
story. I'm surprised
story.
That the people staying in a hostel aren't a bunch of go-getters.
I know. I was the only one up bright and early at 10 a.m. I was like, see.
All right, the only thing I got is that we will have two episodes next week. One is going to be on Wednesday, and then we'll have our normal one on Friday. It is PTSD Awareness Day on Wednesday, so we're going to talk about that. Try to raise some money for Headstrongs and maybe some other organization as well. We'll see you on Wednesday. Sound the retreat.